All right, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Herring River Executive Council meeting of September 14th. My name is Carol Ridley, Project Coordinator, and I would invite the members of the Executive Council who are present to introduce themselves.
Helen Miranda Wilson, former Select Board member, appointee by the town.
Janet Reinhart, former many things and very, very few committees now. This is one of my favorite committees that I will stay on.
Jeff Sanders, Chief of Natural Resource Management and Science at Cape Cod National Seashore.
And Brian Carlstrom, Superintendent, Cape Cod National Seashore.
Excellent. Great. Thank you all. All right, so I have the agenda. Hopefully you can all see the agenda on your screens. We have approval of the minutes of June 15th, 2023, which were circulated with and posted with the agenda for today's meeting. Is there consensus on the minutes? I see yes from Brian, yes from Jeff.
Yes from Janet.
Yeah, I didn't get a chance to read them, so I'm going to say I'm sure they're fine, but I didn't read them.
Yeah. Okay, so you're consenting to their approval by others.
Yeah, consensus, and also the main thing is supporting their release.
Okay, and posting. So we'll consider those final minutes and we will send them. They have been provided in draft form along with the agenda, but we'll submit them as final minutes for the record to the town clerk.
I was just saying thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Great.
Just invite you all to please mute yourselves if you're not speaking.
Yes, we're very fortunate. Okay.
We got a date on the books for next.
Okay. With that, I'm going to move on to project updates, and we'll start with an update related to the construction of the Chequesset Neck Bridge, and Wes Stinson's with us here. Hello, Wes.
Hi. Thanks for having me. Just to give everybody a quick update of where we stand,
Did you want to share screen? I can take this down if you...
Sure. I can share my screen. Let's see here. This would probably be here we are, just so everybody can come up to speed. Here's the current plan that we're working off of. We've been working upstream of the dike, as many of you I'm sure have seen. We have been hard at work getting the temporary bridge installed and components that are going to be, you know, carrying that. So the majority of our work has been the installation of pipe piles that have been going in that are going to form three piers 1, 2, and 3, going from south to north, that will carry the temporary bridge. Right now, as of today, all those pipe piles, 24 in total, 8 in pier 1, 8 in pier 2, and 8 in pier 3, should be all installed. Currently, in the pier caps that are the concrete structures that will be poured on top of those steel piles are being formed, rebars getting installed, and I anticipate seeing concrete poured next week at piers 1 and pier 2. Crews will then begin work on the concrete abutments at either end of the temporary bridge, and those will be poured subsequently in the next, you know, month or so within that time frame. I anticipate the superstructure of the temporary bridge to be delivered sometime mid-October. That installation should take 3 to 4 weeks ballpark. I think conservatively right now, we anticipate this temporary bridge to be fully installed and up and running by the end of this year. So that would be end of December. With the potential that to be sooner, you know, could be end of November, but just conservative estimate there. In addition to the, you know, the physical structure of the temporary bridge, another component that we have to work kind of hand in hand with the utility companies is going to be shifting the existing utilities over the, that are on the dike right now on poles to the temporary bridge. Those will be carried in conduit across the temporary superstructure. And there will be a, you know, there will be a time when those, the utilities will be temporarily shut off to Griffin's Island. We will notify residents, both from our standpoint as the owner's project representative. And I believe the utility companies have to issue their own notifications as well. So that's kind of the big thing on our radar in terms of, you know, coordination with residents, and the town. But everything is moving right along, in terms of the project itself. We are at, roughly 4.8 million spent to date on the project of the 29, you know, $0.8 million, project. Come the winter, we will get going on the permanent bridge, in earnest. Here are some pictures kind of showing, these are the pipe piles in preparation for pier caps. Again, kind of a sequence of the pier cap installation. The deck, these are being formed. And, you know, this last picture here, this will all be encapsulated in rebar, which is, you know, happening as we speak, with the concrete pier caps being installed, like I said, in the coming month. And that is, in a nutshell, where we stand. If anybody has any questions, I'm happy to answer them. Yes, Helen. You may be on mute, Helen.
Sorry. First one, how are the herring doing? Hold on. I'll just give you all three. They're okay. Easy. How are the herring doing? Did the select board ever commit to what the cladding was going to be, or not yet at this point? And the third question is, I understand, you know, things can come up and the utility company is involved, but ballpark, best guess for now, how long would utilities be cut off from Griffin Island?
So to answer your questions, I guess starting at the first one, as far as I know, the herring have not begun their downstream migration. Although I'll caveat that with, you know, I'm, you know, more of a construction management component on this project. I think they're, you know, the herring warden or somebody along those lines would be a better ask. So I can't speak to that specifically. The second question, remind me the second question again.
What was the second question? Help anybody?
The second question was the select board and the cladding.
Select board, the cladding. So Fuss and O'Neill, the design engineers, in the process of putting together kind of an analysis of the various options, with the three primary options on a bridge of this type would be to have like a smooth concrete finish, just a standard concrete form left. The other finish would be a form liner, that when you pour that concrete, there's a form liner installed on the inside of the concrete forms, which would give that texture of kind of a stone that could be then stained. The third option would be cladding, which would be kind of, you know, rock type pieces that would be physically adhered to the concrete structure. Fuss and O'Neill is looking into putting together kind of an analysis of what the, you know, kind of life cycle assessment would be, what the O&M would look like, to present to the select board. So nothing has been determined yet, but it is in the process. And the third question in regards to the utilities, I can't imagine that the utilities would be down for more than a few hours. You know, that's not something that is, you know, it's not acceptable to have people without power for too much longer than that. As we get closer to that time, I will get more information from the utility companies, both Verizon and Eversource, to determine what that will actually look like here.
Thank you, Wes. And just, we will be talking a little bit about herring a little bit later on, but just to note also that for all stages of construction, there is herring passage provided for. Brian?
You're on mute, Brian.
Okay, back to Zoom. In terms of that period of performance, is everything tracking well? I think it's important to capture that in the record.
In terms of the period performance?
Yeah, is the construction cycle, everything going according to plan and on schedule? Well,
everything right now is on schedule and as anticipated. The only, I guess, change that we've experienced is that the Mass DOT has required some larger pipe pile sizes for the temporary bridge. So we're working through a change order right now. As you can see in this photo, these pipe piles that are being installed are 24-inch diameter. The original plan was 16-inch diameter. So there's a lot that, you know, it sounds like that's one thing that's in the mix right now that's getting worked through. But everything else is on schedule so far. So good.
Great. Thanks.
Wes, there was a question in the chat about if you could talk a little bit about how the temporary bridge components are going to be transported to the site and what that's going to look like for the surrounding area.
Let me just scroll up here so you guys can have a visual idea of what it will look like. So the temporary bridge components are going to be brought in on flatbed trucks. I anticipate probably no more than 10 trucks to deliver all the segments. And currently upstream of the dike right here, MIG has established their kind of like roadway access to the site. The trucks will pull up and not all the same time. We anticipate, you know, probably no more than two or three trucks a day when they come in. The trucks will come down along the roadside here on the, you know, I would anticipate the north side of the bridge. MIG will offload them onto their access way off the side of the dike. And they'll have their contractor put together those sections, the ACRO superstructure sections of the temporary bridge, and then place them. There's going to be two 60-foot sections at the north end here and south end here, and then two 100-foot sections here and here. And like I said, that's anticipated to take roughly 4 weeks, and most of that construction will take place off of the road and then be lifted into place. There may be some traffic disruption during that time, but I don't anticipate it to be, you know, there won't be a, I don't anticipate having the road closed. You know, we should always be able to have one lane of traffic. And if a police detail or the like is needed, we'll coordinate that as well.
And Wes, those deliveries are planned to start?
Mid-October,
right, okay, thanks. All right, other hands, other questions? Always a very thorough report. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, great. All right, well, let's move on to other project updates. And Brian or Jeff, do you want to take this one just in terms of quick updates on the water control structure?
Yeah, Jeff's got this one. Lots of good progress report.
Yeah, so right now, I think everyone is aware at this point, but the Natural Resource Conservation Service provided $8 million in funding to support the construction of the Mill Creek Water Control Structure. The park entered into an interagency agreement with them, and that has been completed. So that money is available. We also received $1.425 million from the National Park Foundation. And that's contributing to the non-federal match that's required as part of the award from National Park Foundation. I think it's a 25% non-federal match. And then the Division for Ecological Restoration from the state is covering the remainder of that match. So funding-wise, we're in really good shape. The contract has been closed. The bids have been received. I think there's one bid that's in the process of being selected. I don't know what that bid amount was. They're pretty tight-lipped about that until they make the award. But all indications are that's moving okay. As far as I know, there'll be an award in the next couple weeks, hopefully. But that's kind of where we are at this point. I think the bid and the contract is currently being reviewed at the Washington level.
Fantastic. And construction start?
Well, assuming that the bid happens in the next couple of weeks, I would think that they would start work on the access road sometime after November 1st. So we are under certain restrictions as far as endangered species go. So we have to adhere to northern long-eared bat time of year restrictions. And those start, the time of year restrictions end at the end of October. So construction can start on November 1st in theory. And that's simply because we have to, larger trees can't be removed in this habitat because of the bats. And that extends until April 15th. So the hope they would be able to start after November 1st in theory, but until the contract's awarded, I don't think we'll actually know a defined start date.
Excellent. Thank you, Jeff.
Yep.
Any questions? Right. We'll move on then to other project elements. So I'll provide a quick update here. Final design work is continuing for the low road elevation and culvert replacements. And this is a figure that shows, you know, essentially the segments of road in question. So that final design work is in process. There have been some modifications to the design of some of the culverts to enhance scour protection based on some advanced analysis of erosion potential. So that work is ongoing. We've been working very, very closely with the DPW and, of course, environmental partners on reviewing those design changes to make sure that everything meets the requirements and standards that the town would like to see. At the same time, because they're really related, some of the property impact mitigation work is along the road segments and including the CYCC golf course, and I see Barry's here today. Work assessing those plans is proceeding as well. There was a revised schedule. In prior meetings, we had reported that work at the golf course and could begin this calendar year, and work on the low roads could begin early next year. That's now shifted a year to provide additional work for on-site assessments that are underway and to incorporate all the time needed to finalize these design modifications. And so the revised schedule is competitive bidding, at least for the road work, would be in the summer of 2024. And the construction schedule for the mitigation work and the road work would be fall of 2024, winter of 2025. So everything sort of just shifted out a year. But important to note that that change in schedule does not really alter the restoration schedule according to that 3-year tide gate management plan that the executive council approved some time back. That is still the plan, and this would not interfere with that restoration schedule. So that's an important consideration to bear in mind. And just always good just to kind of update on where we are with funding, which is a very good picture at the moment. All told, about $75 million committed to this project. Jeff just spoke to the $8 million for the Mill Creek water control structure, which is really the last major piece of infrastructure funding. That added to the roughly $65 million that the town has received through various grants. Trying to think if we had the word yet officially. I think we might have just received word on the NOAA project in your last meeting. Of course, there's been additional funding contributed through the Fish and Wildlife Service and the National Park Foundation for the ongoing vegetation management work. So all of that, all of those grant agreements are, you know, moving along, and essentially all of the water control infrastructure for phase one, which is all of the water control infrastructure needed for full tidal restoration, is funded at this point. And all of the mitigation required on public or private property for phase one is also funded. Things are moving along well on the grant administration and reporting front. I think we recall last time that the town has engaged Clipson Larson Allen to be working with the town, with the contractors, primarily through Environmental Partners, which plays a lead role in kind of corralling all of that invoicing that's done by the various construction contractors and making sure that that's allocated to the appropriate funding source, that all of the grant reports that are required on quarterly or semi-annual basis are submitted. So that is all, that infrastructure for reporting and administration is in place and is working really well. So quick update on grants and grants management. And we also wanted to provide a quick update on vegetation clearing and the spoil berm pilot project. And at this point, I'd like to turn it over to Tim to give a quick update on those topics. Tim, are you on mute?
Sorry. Are we going to share the slides?
Yes. Can you see? No. Oh, I didn't.
They're not being shared right now.
Okay. Sorry about that.
Yeah. So if I'm sure everyone is aware of the work done in Duck Harbor last winter. I think I might have talked about this last meeting. So that was 80 acres were completed. From about roughly January to April of this year. That's about two thirds of the contracted work. So about another 40 acres is remaining. Ducks Unlimited and myself have met with the contractor who did that work and talk about the work coming up. We're expecting that to restart again in December. That's contracted, ready to go. Really just a continuation of the work that had already occurred. And the areas are a little scattered through that polygon indicating Duck Harbor. It's not one big contiguous area. It's different scattered patches just because of the way the work was done so far. And then also this year, we want to begin clearing in other areas. This would be a new contract that will need to be bid out by Ducks Unlimited. It may or may not be the same contractor. And we're just beginning to kind of scope out those exact areas, access points, and things like that. The details of that would be needed will be needed for a competitive bidding prep package and for contracting. So we expect to get that worked out and that bidding process in about a month or so. And that would be roughly up to about 60 acres of trees and shrubs with the prioritization on the trees. Because you know they're slower growing, they're less lead time to grow back prior to inundation with tides. And then the rest of that area, along with the Phragmites in the lower river area, would be done next winter of 24-25. Next slide, Carol, I guess. And then this is just a really broad overview of where these areas are approximately. You know, we're at higher resolution in scoping out this work now than these maps, but this is just a reminder of kind of the scale of the Phragmites shrublands and woodlands that we're tackling overall. And then again, for this year, for all of this, it's pretty much highlighting the work south of Hytos Road between Hytos and the Chiquezet Bridge. And then Carol asked for an update about the spoiled worm project. This is the project to remove this anthropogenic fill that had been placed on the marsh in the 20s as a part of channelizing the river. There's been some good progress on this lately. We've completed, our contractors have completed a topographic survey of this area. So we have now very good elevations and other characterization of both the berms themselves and the areas that we're looking at to reuse this material. And the design process is underway to work out the exact, you know, the more specific details about which of these berms to work on, assuming we're not going to have funding to work on all of them, how the work will be done, what kind of quantities we have of material for where that could be spread, the elevations to grade that to. And those are sort of all the details that are being worked out. We expect to have a kind of high level concept plan for this project by November, December of this year. And that will be, once those details are worked out, that will be put into formatted for final permitting plans, which will be submitted to MassDEP, Army Corps of Engineers, and the other agencies sometime in the spring of 24. And then pending that process, expect to go toward construction summer, you know, summer, fall of 24. So that's the status of the berm project.
Great. Thank you, Tim. Great. And just also wanted to note that as part of the ongoing monitoring that is, you know, sort of built into the adaptive management program, some concerning dissolved oxygen levels were observed in Lower Herring River. This isn't, it's not uncommon for there to be low dissolved oxygen in the Herring River, but we've been continuing to explore the implications of that information and have been in consultation with Division of Marine Fisheries and the Wellfleet Herring Warden. Given that we're on the, you know, kind of the timeline for the outmigration of herring from the ponds back out to the ocean. So we're continuing to explore the data, even collect more data in other locations throughout the Herring River to get a better handle on the nature of this. Coincidentally, I don't know if those of you who read the Cape Cod Times might have seen an article this morning about concerns about low dissolved oxygen in Cape Cod Bay this year, which is, you know, again, something they see on a regular basis, but it seems to be just a little bit worse this year. And maybe weather related, could be related to other environmental factors. But again, similarly, trying to collect additional data and understand the implications of that and act accordingly. So if other in consultation with the Herring Warden and Division of Marine Fisheries, if management measures are needed, those can be considered in a timely way. So that is ongoing. And just wanted to also, Helen, go ahead. You may be on mute.
Sorry, I had questions for Tim. Are you going to offer that when you're done with this, or should I have piped up right after he was done?
Oh, I'm sorry. If you would like to ask Tim a question, please, by all means.
Okay, Tim, I have three questions for you too, but I can do them one by one if you wish. My first question is, if we remember the map about the area that's already been sawned, you know, treated.
Yeah.
They left, you know, a certain amount of brush and some tree around the edges of it. I bet there's a reason for that. What is it? It's the slide before this.
Well, really the reason is convenience. I mean, it would be very difficult to try to do anything with the material. We had considered that before. It's something that we may incorporate into future work, but just the scale of trying to gather that material, given the conditions there, was very hard to deal with. And from our observations over the summer, it seems like it's not really causing much of a problem. The material is kind of integrating into the soil. Sort of the soil is, as the plants are growing, the surface is sort of elevating a little bit, and the wood is kind of sinking. It's kind of all integrating with each other, and we haven't really seen too much of a problem. The plants seem to be growing right through it in places. Doesn't really seem to be interfering with plant growth. Doesn't really seem to be interfering with the circulation or drainage of water to any great degree.
Okay, so that was sort of going to be my second question, but I think you just answered it. You know, I've noticed that what's on the edges of the cleared area is doing pretty well. It wasn't killed by the salt, you know, influx. But is what you were talking about those areas of vegetation that you had decided to compare, what happened when you removed the cruder elements, the kind of heavy mulch that came from munching up all that brush and stuff? You were going to compare it to, you know, areas where you didn't touch it, where you had, like, you know, pretty thick sticks and stuff. Is that what you were referring to right now obliquely, or how is that going? Remember you said at the site visit that time that you guys were going to observe what happened when you cleared some of it away in an area and what happened when you just left it.
Right. So in the spring, we did some recon looking at that. At the same time, setting up vegetation transects to document the regrowth of the vegetation. And what we saw was that that distribution of the material was happening naturally. As water came through the area, there's areas that are bare. There's lots of areas actually that have bare soil. There's other areas where it's kind of been piled, sorted into piles, and that whatever we did proactively to try to set up those conditions were going to be affected as soon as the water came through again. So we thought it'd be easier just to let nature sort it out the way it wants to, and then our vegetation transects incorporate both areas of bare soil and areas that was bare soil and areas that have accumulations of cut material to various degrees. And that will be incorporated into the analysis of the, you know, quantifying the regrowth of the vegetation.
So we could just walk out there ourselves and see how is, you know, what is growing where better. So my third question, thank you. And my third question, trying to, you know, move through this quickly, is I want to look up more about seed banks as opposed to, or in conjunction with Phragmites cutting. Do you know what species of Phragmites predominates in this whole area?
There's only one species. It's Phragmites australis.
Yeah. Okay. Yes. Thank you very much.
Sorry, it doesn't really spread by seed. Most seeds are not viable. It spreads by underground growth. Mm. So the seed bank for Phragmites is kind of not a substantial factor in its basis.
Okay, I hear you.
Yeah, Helen, if you walk out to the, if you go out to the Duck Harbor parking lot, there's a tiny stand of Phragmites. If you walk up to that stand and you look at the ground beyond it, you'll see little runners that run along the surface of the marsh that come out of the base of that plant. And that's how it's expanding.
So does it also reproduce from root segments? Because I'm very aware.
It's clonal. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Clonal. That's probably what happened at Moby Dick because, you know, it's surrounded by Phragmites, the restaurant, and there never used to be any Phragmites there at all until they filled in the parking lot. And so if it's not from a seed bank, probably just all you need is a section is clonal. Okay, thank you very much.
All right, great. Thank you, Tim, very much for that presentation and those questions. Just also noting that we had a recent really interesting presentation from Dr. Kevin Kroger with USGS on the ongoing work to understand the extent of blue carbon or carbon sequestration potential in salt marsh restoration, which is also enhanced by the fact that the restoration of tidal wetlands displaces methane emitting freshwater wetlands that are currently throughout the marsh plain. So we do have a recording of that presentation for anyone who be interested. If you haven't heard it, I did circulate it to the executive committee members, executive council members. So, but if anyone else is interested, please just send me an email. All right, so that concludes our project updates. And if there are no further questions, I would turn it over to members for any announcements you may want to provide.
Yeah, Carol, I'd like to say something. I also think we had one additional member join in, Paul. Can you identify yourself any further? Thank you. Looks like he's got a question as well, Carol.
Go ahead, Paul. You may be on mute. Yeah, I'm not hearing.
Can you hear me now? Can you hear me now?
Yes, good. Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thanks. Hello, everyone. Paul Faxon on the stakeholders group. Really, two points that are tied into this agenda and related to two requests. First of all, in terms of the adaptive management, a number of us, including Al Kraft, who's on the call, who are abutting the project and our house properties have Snake Creek as one of the boundaries, we would like very much to be able to meet with Tim Smith to go over specifically what the plans are in terms of vegetation removal that would very directly impact our property and the view. Mm-hmm. So I recognize that Mr. Smith has been in the process of developing those plans and needs to bid them out. But I just wanted to emphasize how important that is, especially to abutting mm-hmm. landowners who will be impacted by that. Mm-hmm. So that's point number one. Point number two is, as the Mill Creek Water Control Structure project begins, there is a concern by folks in the Chiquesset Knolls neighborhood, which, by the way, just spent about $100,000 of its own money a few years ago to repave and reconstruct the road, that the natural thing for workers on that project would be to park on our private road, as well as to bring heavy trucks on our private road and use the circle to turn around. That's not something we can discuss today, I recognize, in any detail, but I wanted to mention it as you are thinking about the on-the-ground construction supervision at that site. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you, Paul. And so we note the request for conversation with abutting neighbors around the vegetation management plans when they're more fully developed. And we can certainly convey the concern about, you know, kind of parking and equipment on the private road to, well, obviously, Jeff and Brian are here from the park. That project will be administered by the park, and we can make sure that that's shared with the appropriate managers.
Yeah, we'll absolutely do that. Jeff will take the lead on coordination.
Okay, great. All right. So back to member announcements.
Yeah, I'd like to just share with everybody, this is going to be my last meeting with the Herring River Executive Council, taking a new position out in Colorado, and that takes place in October. It's been an absolute joy, privilege, and honor to work with all of you. This is what community-level conservation and responsible resource stewardship is all about, and it's exemplary and was been noticed around the country in different ways, and look forward to seeing the project progress on into the future. been super exciting working on it with many of you over these last 5 years, and I wish the project the best going forward. Thanks.
Thank you, Brian, and thank you for your leadership during really critical years leading to the project's success. So really appreciate that, and we wish you well in your new position. It's very exciting. No, yeah. So far from the ocean, though. Maybe that's the design.
I'll be around.
It's Helen. Thank you, Brian. It's Helen. What is the park's approach to somebody who, like yourself, who leaves, helping whoever comes to replace them? Is there some form?
Great question, Helen. I can defer to the fact that we've got a amazingly, incredibly effective deputy superintendent with Leslie Reynolds, and she's going to be the acting in the interim until a new superintendent is selected, and the rest of the team will be working with Leslie and folks in the regional office to get them up to speed, and I'll be leaving a pretty significant set of briefing papers for them as well. So this is a highly coveted position throughout the Park Service, so I'm confident there will be somebody that probably exceeds my leadership capability and management style in different ways coming in behind me. So have confidence in the Park Service, Helen, and we'll work to get them up to speed, and they'll be setting up meetings with various community members like I did shortly after they come on board.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, thank you, Brian. Any other member announcements? All right, not seeing any. And Paul, your hand's still up. Is that from before, or do you have another comment?
No comment.
No? Okay. This is the public comment period. So, are there any other comments from the public? All right, I'm not hearing any. All right, that brings us to the conclusion of our agenda with just one scheduled meeting remaining in this calendar year, which is really hard to believe, but December 14th, which is a Thursday afternoon at 3 p.m. is our next Herring River Executive Council meeting. All right, well, thank you all for joining this afternoon. And members, if you are ready to adjourn by consensus, then we can adjourn by consensus.
I'm done.
Good to go. Thank you, everybody.
With me.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Have a good rest of the day. Take care.
Bye, everybody.
I know.
Bye.